Hi there. If this is your first time here, welcome to the Parenthood and Relationship Podcast. I'm your host, Markella Kaplani, a psychologist, a parenthood and relationship coach, and a parent myself. Together, we explore the transformative journey of parenthood and its profound impact on our relationship with ourselves, our partners, and our children so that we can be present and show up as we envision without having to do more. Let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome to today's episode. I'm going to jump right into it. Today's episode is all about couples and why the relationship appears to get so strained when parenthood is added to the mix. And this is not merely geared towards those partnerships that were shaky before babies. No, I'm also talking to you, my friend, who knows you had a good thing going, and then kids came along and you wonder whether there were signs you missed. You wonder, who is this person you're supposed to be parenting with? You wonder whether you were so desperately insecure or worried about the clock ticking or needing to abide by social rules that you decided to start a family with someone who would have otherwise screamed inappropriate. Well, I'm here to tell you that even couples with good foundations get shaken up with the intense dynamic shift when children come along. We are here today to explore why some couples are able to absorb this shake, because parenthood rocks each of us to our foundation. It changes our entire identity. And why other couples come out a bit bruised or unstable. So if you find that your marriage is being tested as a result of parenthood, whether you believe you started from solid foundations or somewhat or very problematic ones, this episode will speak to you and your partner. First, we're going to tackle the unspoken emotions that each parent may feel but has a tough time describing. Because, you know, this is one of the key factors that creates distance and a disconnect from our partners. Many of us enter parenthood with at least somewhat of an idealized version of what it's going to be like. Most of us have a really idealized picture in our minds, and we're not to blame. It's the movies, the social media, and all those people around us that, for some reason, are so, so eager for us to have a baby. Unless we're talking about family, and, well, sometimes even if we are talking about family, they all disappear afterward. But that's besides the point, isn't it now? Even those who have had a really tough time in parenthood will present the most beautiful moments. And there are many reasons for that, which we can analyze in another episode. But I can tell you this. It's not to deceive others into becoming parents. There isn't some kind of grand scheme behind all this. Still, what comes out of the excitement we receive is a distorted expectation of what it must be like to parent, because it only shows one side of the coin. Sure, it is the most valuable side, and I will tell you, definitely, it is what stays with you, because it trumps everything else. However, when you're in the thick of it, if you don't have a good grasp of what it's really like, it will be quite hard navigating the other side of the coin. When we're in the storm, we start to question, what is wrong with me? Why is it that for me, the good stuff is not powerful enough to draw my attention away from all the struggles I am facing? There must be something wrong with me. I was unprepared. I was not fit to be a mother or a father. I am ungrateful or a failure or anything that it is that we tell ourselves. And so we shut down. We dare not express these feelings that seem to flood us with shame and guilt on top of everything else for even admitting that they're there. We cannot know that we too later will feel the good times. We only feel the good times. We remember the bad ones. And remembering and feeling is not the same. I can tell you from my experience, because I had a really tough time. And even to this day, there are days that I struggle so much that I can't see the good side of it all. I can tell you that I really do remember the difficult days, but I don't feel how it felt. I remember cognitively how it felt, but I don't feel how it felt. Whereas with the good stuff, I really feel those hugs. I feel those kisses. I feel those eyes looking back at me with wonder. And so this is what we get from others who talk about their children. We get that good side of it all because it's the feeling that stays. In general, in every situation, it's the feeling that stays, not the cognitive aspect of it so much. Therefore, we do get some kind of a distorted picture, right? Because we don't get to see behind the scenes of what it's actually like. We get to see what sticks. And so how does that translate for the couple? The unspoken feelings start to create a distance, a feeling of not being understood, known, seen. So get ready for a deep conversation where we talk about where these feelings come from, why they are so powerful, and how they can shape our relationships with those closest to us. More importantly, I'll be sharing some practical advice on how to begin those tough conversations with our partners, opening up lines of communication that can lead to greater understanding and connection. Whether you're feeling these emotions now, or you've felt them in the past, or even if you're preparing for the road ahead, this discussion is for you. So grab your coffee, take a deep breath, and let's get started. Let's begin by diving into the world of maternal emotions. Motherhood, as beautiful as it is, can bring a suitcase full of complex feelings that many mothers find challenging to unpack. One of the first emotions we encounter in motherhood, as we spoke about in the previous episode in detail, is guilt. It's incredibly common among mothers, often stemming from perceived failures. Maybe it's a feeling that you're not doing enough for your child, or that you're somehow falling short of these high standards set by society, or even those you set for yourself. This guilt can be compounded by societal expectations, where images of perfect parenting flood social media and parenting magazines, setting an unrealistically flawless standard that feels impossible to meet. Closely tied to guilt is the feeling of shame. This isn't just about feeling you're not doing something right. It's deeper. It's feeling like you are wrong as a person, as an entity. This can come from personal and societal judgments about what it means to be a good mother. Whether it's not living up to your own expectations or feeling judged by others' metrics, shame can be a very heavy burden to carry. Then there's the feeling of incompetency. It whispers, or sometimes even shouts, that you're not cut out for this, that you're not measuring up to the task of motherhood or to the example set by others around you. It's a tough feeling that can make you question your capability and even your worth as a mother. And it doesn't end there. Many mothers also experience loneliness, often feeling isolated in their experiences or trapped in the relentless cycle of caregiving. Along with this comes resentment too, which can sneak in unexpectedly, perhaps towards a partner who seems less involved or less bothered, less encumbered by parental duties, or toward friends who appear to have more freedom even though they seem to be, and I'll emphasize the seem to be, in similar situations to yours. But where do these feelings come from? Often, they're not born in parenthood itself, if we're going to be honest, but they are amplified by it. Past experiences, unresolved personal issues, or even the way that our own parents raised us can trigger these emotional responses. Remember how we talked about our inner child being triggered when we try to gentle parent our own children, especially if we weren't gentle parented, if we had to disregard our own thoughts, will, emotions, because that's the only way we could have survived in our own familial environment. And now we allow for our children to have these freedoms. Now our inner child gets triggered about why we still possibly don't allow this to ourselves, why our inner child still feels very much controlled while we are trying to do a completely different thing with our own children. And so this triggers the trauma. It beckons us to reparent our own selves. I'll put that link to the episode in the description because I don't remember the number now. So look to the description to find the link and the number of the episode if you're interested in learning more about this. So going back, it's really important to understand these triggers because that is really the first step toward managing them. As we explore these emotions, remember you're not alone in feeling this way. These are shared experiences, common threads in the fabric of motherhood. More or less, we've all felt some of this to an extent. By acknowledging these feelings, we begin to lighten their load, and that's the only way we ever give ourselves the opportunity to start to resolve them. Now let's shift our focus to the fathers. While motherhood is often at the forefront of these discussions about parental emotions, because emotions are typically discussed in circles of women and in terms of women, still in our society, the emotional landscape of fatherhood is equally complex and deeply felt, even though it's not frequently vocalized. For many dads, anxiety is a prominent emotion, particularly concerning new responsibilities, as well as the pressure to provide for the family. But this isn't just about financial provision. It's about being present, engaged, and a supportive partner and parent. The weight of these expectations can be overwhelming, and this can contribute to very high levels of stress. And then we can understand how, if this stress is unaddressed, it can lead to other emotions. A lot of times that would mean anger or abruptness that wasn't really there before. Then there's the feeling of isolation. Many fathers report feeling left out of the deep intrinsic bond that forms between mother and child, especially in the early stages. This can extend to feeling sidelined within the family dynamic, as if they're on the outside looking in, which can be quite disheartening. It is a different kind of isolation to that of the mother, though. The mom is socially isolated. She feels confined in the home. Or even if she goes out, she feels her schedule is dictated by her children and her access to support, so that her interactions are limited. If her partner works long hours, she is practically experiencing the same day over and over and over again, interacting with babies and toddlers almost all day long, if not all day long, throughout her entire week. The isolation of the father, though, is one that is more in relation to the family unit. It's more in relation to him feeling like he is drifting apart from his partner as she gives more attention to the child. It may sound odd, but there are quite a few men that don't realize that the attention will inevitably have to be shifted when a new member comes along. They say they realized, they say they were aware that this would happen, but emotionally, they were not ready for this transition. And they almost end up feeling betrayed by their wives, or maybe even jealous of their child. It's not something they would express openly, but it is something they experience and have shared with me behind closed doors. And this is not intentional. A lot of times this has to do with the attachment style that they had with their parents, which of course then they replicated in their relationship and is now questioned by the new dynamic that is forming. So for example, if they have an anxious attachment style and they need to be validated quite often, they need to feel that the bond is there, they need that confirmation all the time, but the mom is very much involved with her baby, then this could really lead to a questioning of whether they are still important to their partner. And this is very subconscious. Consciously, logically, they could tell you that, of course, this is not the case. But on an emotional level, if I have an anxious attachment style, I am still going to be bothered by this nonetheless. So it takes some work there to unravel and work through all of this. But unless it is something that is expressed, you can get how it can cause an issue to the person experiencing these emotions so deeply. And battling with the logical and realistic thought that this shouldn't be bothering me, right? And so then they don't express it because they understand that this is not rational, yet the emotional component is still there. And then think about the couple. How do they relate to their partner if they are feeling this way, but they're not able to express it either because they know how it will sound? Coupled with isolation, there's often also a sense of disregard, feeling unappreciated or unnoticed. It might stem from their contributions seeming less visible compared to those of the mother, or from a lack of acknowledgement for the sacrifices they make. This is also something that mothers feel. In fact, there are entire books written on this topic, on the invisible labor of mothers, because it is true that a lot of what we do is unacknowledged. It's regarded, even in this day and age, as what a woman or a mother has to do. And then if this all is left to escalate and is never really expressed, it turns into what did you do, what did I do kind of battle. You have two partners that both feel they are underappreciated, that both feel in this way, stuck in a loop of trying to prove how much each of them is contributing and how much support each one needs, when in fact, it would have been just much more productive to just discuss the emotions behind this that are driving these actions and the needs that need to be addressed. Another poignant emotion is the lack of admiration. Many dads feel that the admiration or recognition they used to receive from their partners before becoming parents diminishes after children enter the picture. This change can impact their self-esteem and their view of their role within the family. In fact, many experts in relationships agree that this is one of the things that men need most from their partners, to be admired. They can withstand and work through many other things, but if they no longer feel admired and uplifted by their partners, then this has a huge toll on the relationship. It may even be the breaking point. Fathers also grapple with feelings of frustration or fear of inadequacy, wondering if they're doing enough or being enough for their family. These feelings can build up silently, often without a clear outlet for expression. And just like with the maternal emotions, paternal feelings often have deep roots. These emotions can be linked back to their own upbringings or the expectations set by their personal histories. Perhaps it's the way that their father was with them, or societal messages about what it means to be a good father that shape these feelings. By bringing these experiences into the open, we aim not to just acknowledge the validity of the paternal emotions, but also to really encourage discussion and understanding. Fathers, like mothers, need support and recognition for their emotional journeys in parenthood. Yet we seem to ignore this need. And while I'll be the first to say that mothers need way more support than they are getting, in order for someone to give support, they also need to feel valued. And in order to feel valued, I need to feel seen. And in order to feel seen, my emotions and my feelings need to be acknowledged. So if we're treating fathers as though they are unfeeling, if we're treating fathers as though they don't care, then we are also contributing to this scenario. And this is something that's very difficult to unpack and to realize about ourselves, but many of us might, based on our own fathers or based on society and many men we saw around us, even if our fathers were very present. But a lot of us might have this perception that men tend to not be involved in the family. Men tend to not care as much as women because it's the mother that cares, it's the mother that births, it's the mother that has this bond. Starting from this perspective actually creates the way that we respond to things. We will much more easily recognize the things that prove our standpoint in this, even if it's a subconscious standpoint. And then we will quite easily start to treat our partner as though they are what we think all men to be. Uninvolved, uncaring, unfeeling. And then, of course, this reflects on our relationship too, right? Because if I feel that my partner is not there emotionally for us as a family, then I start to shut down emotionally. And then we just have a co-living situation if we can stand it. So it makes sense that in the second part of our episode, we turn our attention to how these deeply felt yet often unspoken emotions affect communication between partners, particularly once they become parents. This shift in dynamics can be significant with long-lasting impacts on the relationship. So first, let's talk about how these emotions contribute to a breakdown in communication. When feelings like guilt, shame, anxiety, or isolation bubble under the surface, they create a barrier to openness. If I resent you, how open can I be with you? Partners might hold back their true feelings for fear of burdening each other or exposing their own vulnerabilities. This lack of openness, though, can lead to misunderstandings and resentment, which, if left unchecked, may escalate into conflicts. For instance, a mother feeling overwhelmed by guilt may become irritable or withdrawn, leaving her partner confused and possibly reacting defensively. Similarly, a father who is experiencing isolation might stop sharing his day-to-day experiences, which then creates a distance. Understanding why we, as parents, choose to keep silent about our struggles is key to addressing the root causes of the communication breakdowns. And trust me, basically, what couples come to me when they are struggling in their parenthood journey and struggling to connect with one another is 9 out of 10 times purely a communication issue. There are several reasons for this silence, both conscious and subconscious. For one, many parents worry that by expressing their true feelings, they will be judged by their partner. This fear can be particularly pronounced if there are already tensions in the relationship. For example, a mother who feels incompetent might fear that her confession will confirm her worst suspicions about her parenting. Similarly, a father might keep his feelings of inadequacy to himself, worried that speaking up would lead to more disconnection, that it will create an image of him as being incompetent, and then that will isolate him more. Then there's wanting to protect the partner from additional stress. This is especially common in parenthood, where both partners are likely already feeling quite overwhelmed. And so a parent might think, they're already dealing with so much, I don't want to add to their worries. And so they choose to suffer in silence. This protective instinct, while it's well-intentioned, can prevent a couple from sharing their burdens and supporting each other effectively. It can foster a feeling of not being seen or understood and a self-sacrifice that is not being acknowledged. So do you see, I start this. I think I shouldn't burden my partner with these feelings, but then I can't prevent myself from feeling that I'm not understood because he doesn't know how I'm feeling, but I want him to respond to the feelings that I am feeling. As these feelings fester and are not dealt with and not seen by my partner as well, they create a big rift between the couple. And the problem is that this is all happening under the surface and, as we believe, with good intention. So it takes a while before we notice the toll it's had on our relationship and how detrimental our well-intentioned silence was. Finally, societal norms and personal beliefs about what it means to be strong can also play a role. Many parents believe that to be strong, they must show no vulnerability. This belief can be destructive, as it equates vulnerability with weakness, rather than viewing it as an opportunity for deepening trust and connection. For instance, admitting fears about financial stability or not feeling emotionally connected with the child can seem daunting if one believes that a strong parent should always have everything under control, or a good parent is supposed to feel this immediate bond. In my practice, I've seen firsthand what the decision not to speak up about one's overwhelm can do to the couple. So I'll share with you a case that I was working with in the past. A lot of things have been changed or left out on purpose in order to protect the identities of the people involved. But these two lovely people came together and they had a child. Both of them had a very specific image of what it was going to be like. And this image was quite idealistic. It was blissful, kind of like I was talking about in the beginning of the episode. Now, to note, I was actually working with the mother-to-be in preparing emotionally for motherhood, but still, she admitted later that it was difficult to truly understand what it would be like until she lived it. And this is true. But the work paid out nonetheless, because when she found herself in a difficult spot, she was able to express it to me, to say it to her husband, that she was not coping. She felt shame about that, a lot of it too, but she was able to put it into words, and then that led to her being able to work through it. Her husband, on the other hand, despite having the opportunity through his wife's example to do the same, was not in a place to do so. And that is fair. There's a lot of societal and personal issues that could be the reason for this. But what that did was to make his partner feel that she was the only one feeling this way. And when his way to cope with these similar feelings was avoidance, it became very clear how just admitting it would have brought them closer together and even given them room to see this coping mechanism as something necessary and ultimately helpful, if not dragged on, of course, rather than rejection. If he too were able to openly say, yes, I expected something different. Yes, I feel bad that I sometimes hope we had a different baby. Yes, I sometimes feel like I want to stay longer at work because coming home means having to face all these feelings that then makes me feel even worse. Then, if he were able to say this out loud, they would have connected over all of this. And then working through it would have been a natural step, because it was already out there. And this way, the coping mechanism, which like all coping mechanisms can cause harm if dragged on, would have then instead served its short-term purpose without any side effects. Instead, the overwhelm that wasn't voiced, the shame that came because of the overwhelm that also wasn't voiced, led to avoidance, and this avoidance was read as rejection from the other party. What I'm trying to say in sharing this story, which, so you know, is actually quite common, and it's not the first time I encounter something like this, the point is that the journey out of the silence and towards healthier communication requires conscious effort and often a shift in perspective. It involves recognizing that vulnerability is not a weakness, but a pathway to stronger, more resilient relationships. It's about understanding that sharing the load doesn't just distribute the weight, it multiplies the support. Now, let's switch gears and go on to talk about specific strategies parents can use to start these difficult conversations, to ensure that they're productive, and to foster an environment where both of them will feel safe, valued, and understood. I firmly believe that when we tackle these challenges together, as parents, we will not only improve our own emotional well-being, but also we will be modeling healthy communication for our children, setting the stage for open and supportive family dynamics along the line. And this is the whole purpose of this podcast. It is a way to support parents so that we are also supporting our children. So if you find that your communication is lagging lately, here are some practical steps to start the essential conversations that maintain them with compassion and understanding. Initiating discussions about difficult feelings can feel very daunting, I know, but it is the first step towards a deeper connection and towards starting to see one another for who we are, starting to feel one another. So here's how you start. First, it's really, really essential to choose the right time and setting. Timing is everything. Choose a moment when both of you are not overly stressed or tired. It might be after the kids have gone to bed, or perhaps during a quiet moment over the weekend. The setting should be private and comfortable, free from distractions, ensuring that both of you feel safe. I'm noting this, feel safe. To open up. A lot of times one of the partners will throw in a remark in front of the child. The other will get triggered and jump in, and then there will be a secondary fight about not being able to control oneself in front of the child. Let's avoid setting up each other for failure, but let's also recognize that this is a way for the partner who does this, this is a way to create a form of safety. The person who is starting the discussion in this kind of space where he or she does not want to cause a scene for the sake of the child does not do this because subconsciously they want to hurt the child or they want to harm the other person's relationship with the child. They do this hoping that their partner will be able to contain themselves in front of the child because of the child. It is a plea for a more civil conversation, an expression of fear in a way that if talked about behind closed doors, this will escalate too much for them to emotionally handle. This concern, therefore, would be the one that needs to be addressed first, before anything else. And this is where the container that couples therapy offers becomes very, very useful, so that both parties feel safe to enter the discussion, knowing that there will be someone there, not as a referee, but as someone to witness the underlying hurt, the pain from both sides, and hold it. Hold it enough so that it starts to get resolved rather than thrown back and forth like a tennis ball. Because it's one thing to express how I feel, and then it's another to actually ensure that the other person heard it and ensure that I said it in a way that's not just attempting to be hurtful back. There's all these caveats, because there are couples that express themselves, there are couples that have these discussions, but how do they have them, and what happens with the things that are being said? It's not just about having the discussion, it's how you have it. So after choosing the right time and setting, it's crucial that before you dive into your own feelings, you make it a point to acknowledge your partners. Ask them how they're feeling about parenthood and life in general. This shows that you care about their experiences as much as your own, and it sets the tone for mutual respect and empathy. After the conversation has started, there are some tips to keep it constructive and supportive. But before I share those, I want to let you know of this checklist that I made for you so that both of you can have it in front of you and make sure you're staying on track with these tips that I'm sharing right now. Because let's be real, it all sounds nice and dandy when we talk about it in general. But in the beginning, this kind of communication can be quite unnatural, be it because we grew up in an environment with unhealthy communication styles, or be it because no talking at all was the norm, or that we are at such a difficult state with our partner that things can get out of hand quite easily. So I created this checklist so that it can be a good reminder on the spot, right there and then, to get back on track with the way that you intended to show up in this conversation. You can go grab this checklist at markellakaplani.com/couples checklist, or you can have me send it to you for free if you write me a review, screenshot it, and email me that screenshot at info@markellakaplani.com. I will have all this information in the description below, so don't worry. So let's get into some of these tips. When you talk about your feelings, use I statements to express yourself. This is quite common advice. You hear it a lot. And it really is important because it helps in conveying our emotions without making our partner feel blamed. For example, we say, "I feel overwhelmed with the chores," instead of, "You don't help enough around the house." We say, "I feel very anxious when you don't show up at the time that you said you were going to return from work," instead of, "You make me anxious because you don't keep up with your obligations or you don't keep your promises." Do you see how that changes things? Because "I feel anxious" means, okay, how can we address your feeling of anxiety? Instead of, "You are inconsistent with what you promise, and so the first thing that I will do is I will try to defend myself." Of course, that's what will happen. It's a very natural process. It's not that there's something wrong with me and I'm always defensive and I'm always angry. You're accusing me of something. For most people, this will trigger a defensive response. Whereas "I feel anxious" is kind of like the blame is being shifted, and it's not really coming to you. It's becoming an issue that we can both tackle together. It creates a whole different perspective. You bypass the defensiveness altogether. Then, obviously, there's active listening, and it's key. This means truly hearing what your partner is saying without planning your response or your rebuttal. You validate your partner's feelings by acknowledging them and showing total empathy. Here, the point is to acknowledge our partner's feelings and to show empathy. You might say something like, "I see you're really stressed about work, and that makes total sense." And letting that sink in, letting them respond and seeing the response instead of trying to do something about it, instead of trying to interpret the feelings, just mirror the feeling and show validation. Then again, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes the barriers to communication are too significant to handle alone, especially if they stem from deep-seated issues or if they're causing considerable distress. In such cases, seeking help from a coach, counselor, therapist can provide the safe setting we are discussing, along with the appropriate tools to navigate these challenges. This is something that I offer in a program that I have for couples, where we get really intensive, we get really deep by having sessions with the couple and then also separately with each partner, so that while we're working on the couple's goals and the couple getting more connected to each other, we can also be uncovering the personal issues, the personal traumas, the personal attachment styles that each of us have, the things that have led us to be who we are and have shaped the way that we feel and perceive things, so that then we can take that when we feel ready and as we feel stronger into the couple session and see how the dynamic slowly can shift as we shift internally. Sadly, though, couples therapy is usually the last resort, treated as a failure on behalf of the couple to deal with issues on their own. Like, it's a sign of weakness that support is needed. And this in itself makes taking the step more difficult and the process of therapy harder until the resentment for being there is resolved first. It creates this extra layer to work through. What I always tell couples when they come in, and I believe it to my core, is that it's a sign of strength to ask for help when it's needed. For those who enter that program that I described, it really takes a lot of awareness and a lot of courage to say, I'm not going to just look for a patch solution to this. I'm going to go deep. I'm going to realize all the roots. I'm going to take responsibility for what I'm bringing to the table. And you are committing with me to take that same responsibility. In itself, that commitment, me seeing that you as my partner are also committing to looking within and taking your own responsibility and then bringing that together to the couple, that in itself is actually creating the space and the foundation for trust and for the connection to spark up again. Before we conclude, I'd like to leave you with a small journaling activity so that we can keep our journal going. And if this is your first time here, get a journal so that we can do some activities to put into practice what we say so that it's not forgotten and so that it's applied. This exercise can be done individually or preferably as a shared activity with your partner, who I hope has their own journal and is listening with you or will listen to this episode in time. So here it goes. Write down answers to the following questions, which I will make sure to have in the description below. What emotions have I felt most strongly this week regarding parenthood? What specific situations triggered these feelings? How have I communicated these feelings to my partner, if at all? And last but not least, what is one thing I wish I could express more freely? Reflecting on these questions can help identify patterns in your emotional experiences, and it can also aid in improving how you communicate them, paving the way for more honest and open discussions. As we wrap up today's episode, I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with other parents who might benefit from it, and don't forget to subscribe for more insightful content. Remember that fostering openness and vulnerability isn't just about improving communication. It's about building a foundation of trust and support that can weather the storms of parenthood. By embracing these practices, you not only enhance your relationship, but you also create a nurturing environment for your children to grow up in, where emotional expression is valued and respected. So download the checklist that I have for you at markellakaplani.com/couples-checklist and get started in your communication journey. Thank you for joining me today. Let's keep this conversation going. And remember, it's okay not to have all the answers. What's important is that you're taking steps together to find them. See you next Sunday.